Goddess of Yesterday, A Tale of Troy, by Carolyn B. Cooney. Chapter 1. I was 6 years old when King Nicander came to the island of my birth, demanding tribute and a hostage. I didn't know what a hostage was, nor tribute. The king was taller than father. His oiled beard jutted from his chin like a spear point. His arms were hard and tanned, his eyes twinkling. I liked him right away. "So you were Alexandra," said Nicander. I corrected a king. "Not Alexandra, Anaxandra." His eyes crinkled at the corner when he smiled. "Anaxandra, you are coming for a sail with me. You will be companion to my daughter, Callisto." A sail? I was so excited. I hardly bothered to kiss my parents goodbye. My brothers got to go to sea and have adventure, but I always had to stay home with mother. And I had never met a princess. Callisto means the fairest, just the right name for a princess. The way Anaxandra was just the right name for me. Mother packed some clothes and my fleeces and put my doll in a box, which I hugged to my chest. I had never owned a box. And mother always kept jewelry in this one. It was heavy, which meant she left some jewels in it. I would have a guest gift for the princess. An officer sat me on his shoulders, and off we went. I never looked back at my brothers, standing in a row, silent and envious, and I never waved to my parents. Our village was perched 1,000 feet above the sea. The path to the harbor tilted steeply. I clung to the officer's neck so I wouldn't fall off. "What's your name?" I asked. He peeled my fingers from his throat so he could breathe. "Lycus." This means wolf, which made me think of my puppy. I had named her Seaweed because when she romped in the water, she came out hung with green fronds. I almost told Lycus we had to go back and get Seaweed. But I remembered that I would be home by bedtime to tell Seaweed all about it. The sailor carrying my clothes and fleece said to Lycus, "Why didn't the king take sons for hostages? A little girl isn't going to make Chrysaor double his tribute." Chrysaor is my father's name. It had the word for gold in it. My mother's name was Iris, which means rainbow. The king caught up to us. He tugged on my long curls and told me I had hair as red as King Menelaus. I had never heard of King Menelaus. "A girl as hostage?" said Lycus to the king. "Chrysaor needs a son to pirate with him," said the king of Cephas. "But his daughter he loves. He'll obey me for her sake." The donkey path was slippery with pebbles and sand. The men struggled for balance and swore at my father for not chiseling steps into the stone. Steps would make it too easy for pirates. Father knew because he was one. He loved to tell about the towns he had sacked and burned. He had many slave women he had brought back, the men he couldn't keep, because they knew how to use weapons and were too dangerous. All around the island, the sea sparkled. We wound down the bare bones of cliffs to the harbor. Where there were so many ships, I could not assign a finger to all of them. I used up 10 fingers counting ships. Tucked my elbow into my side to keep the first 10 safe, used my fingers over again, and had to tuck in my other elbow. Altogether, there were 10 ships. 10 ships, and 8 more ships. Long and slim, with black hulls and red sails. Each sail was stitched with a white octopus, its long legs tied in knots. "You have enough ships to take Troy, don't you?" I said to the king. My father sailed past Troy every year. He admired Troy, but hated her more. "Troy," repeated Nicander, and he and his men looked east, where Troy lies, far, far away. Troy is built on a citadel above a strange, rough river that runs uphill into a second sea. Beyond the second sea are endless supplies of slaves and grain, gold and amber. The river is the Hellespont, and only with a very strong wind can a ship go up it. If there is no wind, a ship waits in the harbor of Troy. On the return voyage, when the ship's hold is full, Troy takes her share. She is the richest city on earth. No, said Nicander. I could not take Troy. We waded out to the ships. Seaweed and I played here. The stones were flat and good for skipping. Is Callistra on the ship? I asked the king. Or is she at your house? Callisto is at my house, said the king, although my house is called a palace. She isn't very well, Anaxandra. She can't run and jump the way you can. You will sit quietly with her and spin.
What kind of adventure would that be?
A man as hairy as a goat leaned over the edge of the king's ship to lift me on board. He laughed at the idea of a girl hostage when there were boys to take, and he tossed me high into the air. My father threw me around all the time, and I loved it. But when the goat-haired man caught me, I saw he had expected me to be afraid. I am never afraid, I said severely. I can do anything. I can swim underwater, and my brothers can't do that. I can even swim into father's caves. The king was still waist-deep in the water, his men cupping hands to give him a leg up. Can you now? Said the king. And what caves are those, Anaxandra?
Where father keeps the real treasure, I said.
It took Nicander's men all afternoon to get my father's treasure out of the caves and load it onto the ships. How they laughed, congratulating Nicander on his wisdom. Taking a silly girl as hostage instead of an intelligent boy. A girl who had just sold out her own father. The king's ship was hollow inside, the deck planks removed to reveal the hold. In went piles of spears and bee-waisted shields, ingots of bronze, and a silver sword pommel, a gold mask, and ivory combs. I sat on a coil of rope. It was damp and salty, the color and texture of an old woman's hair. Waves lapped against the ship like dogs drinking from a puddle. What would father say to me when I got back tonight? At last, Lycus bellowed, "Deck the ships!" The slamming of timber was heard on all sides as the cargo was covered by the deck beams. The masts were lifted and placed in their supports, and the anchor stones raised. Nicander flung wine into the sea.
"Earth Shaker!" he shouted to the god. "Give us a safe return home."
The wooden ships groaned and creaked. Bright banners slapped in the wind. There was no need for rowing with the wind so fine, and the men relaxed on their benches. I had not known that when you sailed away from your island, it got smaller. I had not known it would vanish. I kept my eyes fastened to the place where my island had been. The sun was going down. The sea turned molten gold and the sky purple. It's bedtime, I said to the king. I can't play with Callisto after all. We have to sail back home now.
You're not going home, Anaxandra, said the king.
Not tonight or any night. Cephas will be your home. I stared at him. How could anything be home except home?
Not that you're much of a hostage now, he added. A hostage is useful only if its father wants it back. I doubt if your father ever wants to see you again.
I? My father's favorite?
Your name, Anaxandra, said Lycus tearfully, will never be spoken in your home again.
I could not go home. My parents and my brothers would not want me. It was so shocking that I could not cry. A few hours later, I learned why I had my fleece, so I could sleep on the sand of an unknown island, having eaten cold hummus from a bowl. I had not known that you could be made to fall asleep without your mother to tuck you in. On the second day, the wind failed us and the crew rowed. We passed many islands. From a distance, each looked like my own. But as we drew close, the island always turned out to be larger and greener. When no one was looking, I opened my box. There lay my best doll on a bed of mother's gold necklaces, and next to her lay my stone Medusa idol. Medusa is always shown with her scream pouring out of her mouth and the snakes of her hair writhing.
Medusa has the power to look upon an enemy and turn him into stone, so she is very powerful to have at your bedside. Of course, I had never met an enemy. My father and mother protected me. And now, I had failed them. On the third day, the king took me on his lap. "I have a great debt to the Lord God Apollo," said the king. "And with your treasure, I will go to Apollo's temple at Delphi and pay what I owe." Apollo was an immense god, too big for our little island.
"I hope the Lord Apollo refuses the treasures," I said to the king. "They aren't yours."
"They are now," said Nicander, grinning. "We have caves on Cephas, too, Anaxandra. But yours are natural, and ours are dug in order to mine gold. Every year we make an egg of solid gold, as large as a man's fist, and offer it to the gods at Delphi." My father had been to Delphi. The priestess there was the mouth of God and could answer all questions. I imagine my father's gifts sitting next to the great gold eggs of Cepheus. The egg is very blessed, being a perfect container of future life. "One year," said the king, "I thought Apollo had enough gold, so I sent him an egg of lead wrapped in gold leaf. I was shocked. He looked the same as many other men, but he had purposely cheated a god," I said silently to my own goddess. "When we land, even though they may not know you on their island, I will honor you. You shall have real gold, not lead. I will keep the doll and the Medusa, and you will have mother's necklaces. I don't want to give Callisto a guest gift after all."
"Apollo took his revenge," said the king. "First, he sent plague. I had never seen plague. Mother said it lived best in the cities. She had been born in a city and never once went back after she married father. I thought about never going home. Then Apollo sent rust to infect the crops. We were hungry that winter. And then my baby son died, the fourth of my sons to die."
"Four dead sons?"
I held my mind very flat, so no thoughts could fly off and be heard by such a god. "Plague and dead babies?" I prayed to my goddess to keep me safe on an island where such a god ruled. "Then," said Nicander, "Apollo flooded my gold mine with seawater." I thought this was rather clever of Apollo. He would just keep the gold to start with, and Nicander could never cheat him again. The oracle at Delphi said if I brought all the gold on Cephnos, it would end the god's anger. But though I brought all the gold, my fifth son died. Then the oracle told me, "Bring more gold." He stared out over the waves. The sea was empty. Not a dolphin, not a gull, not a ripple. The name of his island is Cepheus. Empty. To raise that, I have been visiting every chieftain who owes me allegiance. Your father, Anaxandra, is a famous sacker of cities. In song, he is compared to the crafty Odysseus and the great Achilles. Yet your lovely mother had only jewels and clothing for herself, and your father's cache of arms was hardly enough for two ships. He grinned at the frothy waves and the rising tips of many oars. You solve the mystery, little Anaxandra. On the fourth day, we reached Cepheus. It is an island as bare and bony as my own. We climbed a path so steep it bled stones. A cliff reached over us like rock fingers, hoping for an earthquake and the chance to drop on our heads. But at the top, the land relaxed. Fields of barley were green and gold, and grapevines grew and rose as even as weaving. There were flocks of sheep so large that Nicander taught me a new number. 1,000. We walked for a whole hour to reach the walls of Cepheus town. The people had painted the stones white, so the walls glared in the sun. We went in through a gate twice as tall as the king, and the walls around the gate curved. And I was amazed, for I had thought walls must be straight. What had looked like an unbroken wall from the outside was houses on the inside. Every family's house fastened to the next family's house.
These formed an open square bigger than my father's entire town. In the center of the square sat a massive chunk of green marble with a hollow bowl chiseled in its center and a spout at the edge. Around the altar were the treasures wrenched from Nicander's chieftains. I had to admire a king of such force. Strength comes from the gods, and in the end, Apollo desired Nicander to be strong. Great crowds of people filled the square to embrace their returning men and honor their king. Women pounded the bottoms of copper kettles while old men stood in stiff salute. Girls brought flowers and boys brought lambs. And then the king disappeared into another gate. Lycus went to greet his own family, and I stood alone, too short to be seen, too small to be remembered. I clung to my box. Finally, I followed the king's footsteps and found myself in another courtyard. All the way around were ground floor porches, and all the way above were porches in the air. Boxes of flowers hung off rails, and pots of flowers stood in corners. In the center of the second courtyard was the most beautiful and horrifying thing I had ever seen. A child had been turned to stone. He stood in water that splashed out of his hands, and around his feet, tiny fish swam and lilies bloomed. I couldn't breathe. What had he done that Medusa turned him to stone? Was this one of Nicander's dead sons? The boy was about my age. Even his eyes had been turned to stone, blue agate that glittered in the sun. "Oh, my goddess," I prayed, "have pity on this little boy." "God's knees," said the king's voice. "I forgot Chrysaor's daughter." Nicander strode over. The frozen child watched us both. The king was surrounded by rich townsmen whose clothing was embroidered and pleated and whose beards and hair were oiled and braided. "This is the child who gave me the treasure," said Nicander. And they all laughed. I didn't know how they could laugh when the dead son of their king was frozen beside them. "What happened to your little boy?" I asked. The king looked around, puzzled. "The boy now stone," I said. There was a moment of silence, and again came men's laughter. The king picked me up and held me straddling his hip. The boy in the fountain was never a real boy, Anaxandra. He was carved by a mason. He is called a statue. I did not believe that. The boy had been caught mid-step, and his bare toes are curled. His limbs were smooth and round, as if his mother had just bathed him. And his hair was thick and dense. And perhaps it was his mother who now joined us, a woman as beautiful as her stone son, with intricately braided black hair and earrings that hung to her shoulders. "Lady Petra," said the men, turning their faces to the ground to honor her. She was laughing. "The little girl has never encountered a statue before?" "Anaxandra comes from a primitive island, my dear," said the king. He set me down and put my hand in the queen's. "She will take considerable instruction. Her value as a hostage is gone, but she will be fit company for Callisto." The queen and I went up a ladder, which the queen called stairs, to an air porch, which she called a balcony. Their house was indeed a palace. There were 6 rooms on each floor. We passed through a sleeping room for the queen alone. If 5 of my babies had died, I would not want to share a room with my husband either. We entered a bathing room, its smooth, cold floor painted with dolphins and blue waves. Slaves stood me in a low tub and scrubbed me. And when I was clean, the queen massaged perfume oil all over me. "The skin of a peasant is dry and flaky," she told me. The skin of a young lady, should gleam like sunlight on water." I hadn't known this rule. It turned out there were many rules I hadn't known. When the queen oiled my feet, she was appalled to find my soles as rough as oxhide. I never wore sandals. I could run over hot sand and sharp rocks without flinching. "You will wear slippers or shoes at all times, Anaxandra. A young lady has soft feet." She toweled my hair so hard I bounced. And as she combed out the snarls, I looked up to see a pale, thin girl sitting on a high stool, staring down at me.
"Hello, Anaxandra," she said softly. "I am Callisto. I think you are fortunate to have such tough feet. You can use your feet, and I cannot use mine. What happened to your feet?"
She drew up her gown. Her legs were sticks, and her feet were not flat on the bottom. I didn't see how she could put weight on them. Then I realized that she couldn't.
"I almost never go out. Father says you will have a score of stories to tell me about your island," she said eagerly.
"Maybe 1,000, I said, using my new word.
But the queen shook her head. "The feast is beginning. Come, there is much to rejoice in. The king is safely home, and he has brought riches. The gods will be pleased." And no man was lost. I was not safely home. I was not rich. I was afraid of their gods, and my family was lost.
Down the stairs, out of the palace, and into the town we went, Callisto carried in a chair. I saw that I did have something to rejoice in. I wasn't frozen, like Callisto and the boy of stone. Through the curved gate was brought a creature so massive, I couldn't believe it submitted to men. Its four great legs moving slowly, and its wide, dark eyes looked ahead without anger. Very large horns curved from the sides of its great white head. I was awestruck.
"What is that?" I whispered to Callisto.
"It's an ox. Have you never seen one pulling the plow?" I had hardly even seen a plow. Our fields are narrow strips of dirt terraced on sharp hills. Behind the wondrous ox came 6 horses. I had never seen a real horse, only pictures on vases. Father captured horses now and then, when he took a foreign city. But carrying horses on his ship was difficult, and feeding them on a ship was worse. He never brought one home, for we had no place for a horse to run, and no grain to spare. Besides, horses had weak backs, Father said, even though they looked strong. Donkeys were better. 2 of the horses pulled a real chariot, and beside the driver stood the king, splendid in purple. Callisto sang the invocation, her voice high and warm, like a wooden flute. "Listen, daughters of thundering Zeus. Listen, sons of great gods. Dance in honor of golden-haired Apollo." The ox was brought to stand over the marble altar. And how clearly now I saw the difference between a mere chieftain and a real king. My father made things holy with a little lamb, but a king made things holy with a beast so great and calm. The priest lifted his double-sided axe, while the people lifted their voices. Grasping the ox's horns, the men pulled its head back, and with one great plunge, the priest slit its throat from side to side. There was so much blood, it overran the hollow and spilled out into the basin below. When that had filled, a second basin was brought. No wonder their fields are so green. No wonder their sheep were counted with that number 1,000. When they diluted this holy blood with water and walked the fields, scattering it drop by drop, how blessed would be the soil. One by one, we dipped our fingers into the holy blood. I raised my hands high to the goddess of my island, that she might not be omitted from this event. "O goddess of yesterday," I sang. The crowd fell silent to hear me. I was frightened, but having addressed the goddess, I had to go on. I pitched my voice to carry across the sea. "Hear my cry. Stay with me. Be also my goddess of tomorrow." A pair of swallows swooped above me. Nothing is more holy than the flight of birds, for they cross the divide, equally at home in heaven and earth. It was a good omen.
"You are strong in magic, Anaxandra," whispered the queen. She marked my forehead with her bloody thumb. "There," she said, kissing each side of the print. "Your goddess who was with you yesterday will be with you tomorrow, and every tomorrow to come." And so I feasted with the people of Cephnus, and danced among them, while the blood print crusted and dried.
I wondered just how blessed I was, marked by a woman from whom the gods had taken 5 babies.
Chapter 2. The king and queen had buried the babies in the wall between his bedroom and hers. We did not do that on our island, preferring graves far removed from houses. I never quite got used to having their little sets of bones inside the wall, just beneath the plaster. For a whole year, I slept in a ball to keep my feet safe. Every morning when I rose, I smoothed away the impression of my body from my mattress. Otherwise, evil might lay down in my shape and wait for me. I opened the bedroom door carefully to allow night and day to trade places without tripping over me. It made Callista laugh. "Nobody does that anymore," she would tell me. "Not even the peasants in the hills. In this place called a palace, they took a knife to their bread, slicing their loaves instead of tearing off hunks. A knife is a weapon. A blade should never attack bread, the most important gift of the gods." The king himself would wade through a creek without first washing his hands. What would the water think, knowing that even the king did not care if he was pure? I thought of family whose only daughter was crippled and whose 5 sons had died in infancy should take more care. My hostage father, the king, loved feasting and celebration. Every time a ship of his came back safe and rich, he roasted a ram for the gods. Every time we had guests, I stayed up late to listen, hoping to hear news of my parents, Chrysaor and Iris, but I never did. Sometimes I cried myself to sleep, and although I buried the sounds in my fleece, Queen Petra knew and came to rock me. More than one night she slept beside me because I would not let go of her hand. Petra said that my fate had come from the gods and could not be avoided. "When you are born," she said, "Zeus takes his 2 jars and shakes them, the joyful and the sorrowful. Your fate is poured out. No one escapes." Yet not a day went by that I didn't escape in my heart. When I was under the sky instead of the roof, I was closer to home. I explored hollows and hills. I ran along slender beaches and brought back just the right stone for Callisto. I followed the sheep and the goats up hillsides too steep for crops. I was drawn to an empty, silent meadow with a single olive tree, old as time. It was a hideous tree. In some distant decade, farmers had cut the trunk almost to the ground, and out of the great flat stump had grown massive side trunks, now rotting and split around the table of the stump. In each decaying knot and elbow were staring eyes and open mouths that screamed silently, like Medusa. The shepherds, who were teaching me to use a slingshot, warned me away from this tree. "Beneath that olive, take no rest, Alexandra. Pan, god of chaos, visits there." But I thought myself braver than any shepherd or warrior, for I swam underwater into caves. I poked my bare fingers into a rotted mouth and left my mother's jewels in the olive tree for my goddess. I explored every tiny lane in Sifnus Town, with its alleys as tangled as fishermen's knots. The town huddled nervously inside its high white walls, and the doors of houses looked around, worrying, as if knowing that their king did not properly honor the sacred places. I played with all the animals, especially the dogs, but I never had one of my own again. On our island, people slept on raised platforms in the same room as their sheep, so they were always warm, although a bit smelly. But in Sifnus Town, the doors on the ground floor led to separate rooms for animals, while families entered their homes from the porches in the air. Whenever I could, I went to the stable to admire the king's horses. "You have more horses than anybody, don't you?" I said to him one day when we were feeding them windfall apples. Nicander laughed. "We have 6 horses. Menelaus, the king of Sparta, has 50, and in Troy, they have 1,000 horses twice the size of mine. They scorn our horses and call them ponies. Trojans tame wild horses and ride on them." "No, they don't," I said. "Men don't ride on horses." "In Troy, they do. And farther east, around the Third Sea, the one called Black, all the people ride on horses, even the women and children." I couldn't believe that. Horses went too fast. You would fall off. And how could you get up on a horse to start with?
The Trojans stand on a stone, Nicander explained, so they're high enough to swing a leg over the horse's back. The rider clings with his knees and knots his hands in the mane. The horse goes so fast, a man's hair streams out behind him. A donkey wouldn't go any faster than you could walk. What would it be like to move so swiftly that your hair streamed out behind you? My father, Crusader, had long, honey-colored hair. He preferred it loose, but when he was fighting, his slave braided it. Every memory of my father made my heart peel away from my ribs and thump in a lonely place. Anyway, horses eat far too much grain, I told the king, with the voice used by the queen when she scolded him for keeping 6 useless creatures. How could those Trojans feed 1,000 of them? Around Troy, the grain fields stretch for miles, uninterrupted by rock and cliff. Troy doesn't have to buy wheat. They really can feed 1,000 horses. Talk of Troy made men's eyes distant and full of memory. Troy's walls, Nicander said, are as high as a cliff. The houses are 3 stories high, and the watchtowers 2 stories higher than that. I have 1 main gate. Troy has 4. I have a brook that runs only in the spring. Troy has 2 rivers of her own, and the Hellespont as well. I have 2,000 sheep. Troy, 1,000 flocks that large. I pressed my cheek against the horse's beautiful neck. I did not believe any horse could be twice her size. I have never been inside the gates of Troy, said Nicander. They are careful of their gates. Because the city is so full of treasure, I said eagerly. What if a sea captain like you refused to give them a share of his cargo? You could not outrow or outsail Troy's warships. They'd ram you. Then they'd have your cargo, your ship, and you. Could Troy be taken? I asked. What a little warrior you are. Crusader must have grieved that you were born a girl. Taking Troy would require a vast fleet. Every king on the mainland and every king from every island would have to join the attack. Such a thing has never happened. And an attack must have a general. To what man would kings submit? And even if such an army were put together, Troy would just sit behind her walls and wait till winter came. You could fight all winter and starve them out. Where would you get your own food? Your own firewood? You can't sail during the winter, so you couldn't go get what you needed. How many shiploads of supplies would it take for so huge an army? How could you man all those ships? If you built winter quarters, you'd have to bring tents and lumber, grain for flour, women to bake the bread. And what about the families you left behind, unguarded? While you froze on the beaches of Troy, your people would run out of food and be attacked by some other enemy. I was impatient with details. But these Trojans who ride horses, I demanded, are they good warriors? Or do they just have a good place on the water? Could you whip them? Nicander grinned. I would love to bring sobs and groaning to Trojan wives, but I do not think I or anyone else could whip Troy. Shortly after that, Nicander took half his fleet and sailed for the third sea, the one called Black. The queen said it was because I had talked too much about Troy. Then she found out the shepherds had taught me to use a sling. The sling is a tiny leather hammock with 2 cords the length of your arm. You place a small, smooth stone in the sling, swing it in hard, fast circles, and release the cord. The stone flies with great force. A shepherd could bring down a partridge for dinner with his sling. In war, of course, a good shot between the enemy's eyes would kill him. It took me a year to learn how to aim at all, but to aim well, to bring back a wandering sheep by kicking up the dust in front of its grazing face. This is a great skill. The queen was not impressed and ordered me to the women's wing for good. There I sat as the women worked looms and the girls spun. A whole day spinning makes thread for only 1 hour of weaving. I liked the rhythm, tossing my spindle into the air, feeding fiber into the twist. My spindle was a gift from Petra, polished and painted. Petra said that Helen, wife of King Menelaus, had a spindle made of solid gold. Petra loved to speak of Queen Helen, the most beautiful woman in the world, and of the one time they had met. A gold spindle would be too heavy to use, I objected. Anyway, said Callisto, I don't believe a queen such as Helen ever actually spins. Helen is the daughter of a god.
Every woman spins, said Petra. God child or no?
When we weren't spinning or weaving, Callisto and I played with dolls. A girl plays with her dolls until she's married. Callisto and I never admitted it, but both of us would play with dolls forever. Marrying Callisto, only child of the king of Cephnus, would bring a man power, but no children, for Callisto was too weak to bear them. No man wants wealth more than sons. As for me, a hostage whose family no longer cared to redeem me, I had nothing to offer any husband, and never would. The king was gone for a year. The queen heard petitioners, helped the poor, and settled estates. The throne was plastered into the floor to show that the king was attached to his world. Petra never sat on the throne. When Nicander came home at last, he brought back the usual treasure: grain, women, lumber, a necklace of deep, mysterious blue for Callisto, strange, shimmery cloth for Petra, a vase painted with Trojan horses for me, and for himself, a mining engineer.
No, Nicander, said Petra, please do not return to that mine.
The king laughed. He was very excited. He could hardly wait to show the engineer the old mine shaft. I made my peace with Apollo, he told his wife. Now it merely remains to find a new entrance to the gold. She caught his arm, but he shook her off, and with long strides set off for his ruined mine. Almost immediately, the sky blackened at its edges. The air took on a strange smell, as if we were biting tin. But the king and his engineer walked on. The earthquake hit just as they reached the old shaft. They were thrown to the ground, but not into the hole. The kitchen wing of the palace fell in, and 5 slaves died. The horses were in the paddock, but they broke through the gate. 5 ran safely into the fields, but the 6th, in his terror, galloped off the cliff. How the king and queen argued over the meaning of the horse's death. Apollo wants his gold left alone, said Petra, furious and afraid. Now, my dear, said Nicander, sometimes an earthquake is just an earthquake. It is my gold, and I am taking it.